What's going on, everybody? This is Alex for the EOT News Flash with a quick reminder that we are now being sponsored by FlipsideGaming.com. Be sure to check them out for all of your Magic the Gathering needs, and be sure to use promo code EOT News Flash at checkout for 10% off your order. Now let's get to the show. This is Alex once again, another episode of the EOT News Flash. This is episode 85, Dino Time with CVM. If you saw my posts on Facebook earlier, my tweets, you know we have a very special guest in addition to both Justin and Sean who are back in the house tonight. We've got directly to my, let's see, right, if you're watching this on YouTube, the one, the only, Mr. Christopher Van Meter. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I know that you reached out to the Twitterverse asking for podcasts to talk about dinosaurs on, and I could think of no better place than to do it than here.
Yeah. The dinosaurs are great. Unfortunately, they're not very good in standard, but they're still great.
They are still great. I mean, there were a couple of dinosaurs that made top eight, so it's not like they're not showing up. It's kind of like the early swarm in Jurassic Park before the big guys come over the hill. And I think that's what we're going to see soon. But
we're just seeing the little poison one that kills Newman from Seinfeld. We got warm up.
That's about right. That's about right. And we've also got Justin right beneath me. How are you tonight, Justin?
I'm doing all right.
I'm real disappointed you're not wearing your magic tie, but we won't judge you too harshly.
It's not a skinny tie.
It's not, okay, not a skinny tie. That's fair. And also, Sean, how's it going, Mr. Busted Sleeves?
Pretty good, man. I'm glad I was able to get on.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Ooh. You've got kind of half of Chris's screen there, so we're going to fix that while we get started here this evening. So we got some cool stuff to talk about tonight. We have our first week of Standard with Ixalan to go over the full top eight from both the Dallas Open and the Dallas Classic. And fortunately, we've got the Standard, you know, master himself, Mr. Van Meter, in the house tonight, of course, to kind of give us his take on what he likes and doesn't like and how Standard should look moving forward. So, of course, we are very gracious for his expertise.
So Standard is normally at the start of a new Standard format. My go-to is to be as aggressive as possible. Sure. And I think the most aggressive deck in the format is Ramunap Red, and we saw that take second place in the Open. Mm-hmm. But there weren't a whole lot of red at the top tables. And the reason for that is the Standard format we have right now, even though it's new, we're on the back of a very, very parasitic mechanic and energy.
Yes.
And with energy already being a good deck all by itself, all it needs is just a few cards to supplement into that deck from the new set, and you're up and running. So there's no need to be aggressive to attack an unknown format. Like, you already know what one of the pillars of the format's going to be, and that's going to be the energy deck. Mm-hmm. So then you can plan accordingly. So we saw a lot of Sultai energy and four color energy, because this format, even though Ramunap Red is a good deck, it's all about the Scarab God. And because of that, it's become all about Hostage Taker, as it's a good, efficient answer to Scarab God. It's one of those cards that's good early, but just scales to be insane in the late game. And I don't think anything is going to change as we move forward in the Standard format. It's going to be a lot of Scarab God and Hostage Taker until the energy cards rotate.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So let's dig into that, the top eight then. In first place, we've got Mr. Andrew Jessup of the Metagame Gurus, who have been tearing up the standard or just the Magic in general on the SCG circuit, playing that Sultai energy deck, like you mentioned here, Chris. Walking Ballistas, Glint Sleeve Siphoner, a really cool sort of Dark Confidant-esque impersonator. Hostage Taker, like we said, probably the best card in Standard right now. Long Tusk Cub, Rogue Refiner, Winding Constrictor, Rishkar, and of course the Scarab God. You know, going into this weekend, like you said, this probably wasn't the deck known to beat, but coming out of this weekend, it is the deck now to beat. So what do you like about this deck here, Chris?
So I really like that you have the base of the energy deck, right? Like, you have value with Rogue Refiner, you have Long Tusk Cub, which is just a card that can take over the game if it gets to run rampant. Mm-hmm. And then rather than going with something like Whirler Rogue that you see in the teamer based energy decks, we're more on that Glintsleeve Siphoner. So it gives you a little more card advantage against the control decks. It allows you to play a little more lean attrition style game plan against the other aggressive or other energy decks. But then you also get to take advantage of Hostage Taker. So in the energy mirror, Scarab God, like who can live with the Scarab God and utilize it the best, is just going to win. It's the way to go over the top. And Hostage Taker gives you a way to interact with opposing Scarab Gods. It also gives you a way to interact with like those other lean creatures, right? So if we're both playing energy and on turn six, you're just like playing a spell or a spell and an attune, and then I get to go Hostage Taker, take your Long Tusk Cub, cast it, I'm way far ahead, and there's not much that you're going to be able to do unless you have Hostage Taker in your deck. So with everybody on this energy mid-range type deck, Hostage Taker is the trump, and until people start trying to go way over the top with like Approach the Second Sun, we saw with Jim Davis, I think it's still just going to be finding a way to break that Hostage Taker mirror.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So Sean, what about you? Wait, you and Justin, anything that you really stands out to you in the Sultai Energy deck?
So I played the four color energy at the Star City Games. I actually ran Hostage Taker in my four color energy deck. Wow. For the reason that it just like lets you trump these matchups. It's really good against red because all their curve is so low that you can just, if you have a Servant, you can turn four, take their Soulscar Mage or anything along those lines. One of the big concerns I had a lot of times, the Hostage Taker was a lot of times a tempo play because they're going to try to kill him. The thing the Sultai deck has that's really strong is I didn't used to like four Blossoming Defenses.
Yeah.
But the strength of Hostage Taker, the ability to Hostage Taker with one mana open, save him, and then cast what you took is pretty huge. So getting Blossoming Defenses is real big. And the other deck in the format that I think is really powerful is Approach of the Second Suns. I think that deck is probably poised to be one of the top two or three decks in the format. And being Sultai gives you access to the four Duresses plus counter magic, so your approach matchup's not nearly as bad. And I find that kind of pretty interesting. Just the ability to just go in and rip apart what they're planning to do, because they can end up with a lot of answers and no actual approaches whenever you have the Duress going. So it's got enough interaction to have some pretty sweet matchups against that deck, which that deck I think is way better against the teamer version than it is the Sultai one.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Justin? Anything that really sticks out to you about the Sultai Energy deck here?
I think the biggest thing that surprised me about this deck is some of the things in their sideboard. Like, we've got the Deathgorge Scavenger.
Yep.
And, you know, to hate on the Gifts deck and stuff. But I just kind of assumed we'd be seeing other primary graveyard hate than this card, personally. And then also, I did not expect Vraska to make any impact on Standard whatsoever. I mean, she's six mana. She makes pirates, but she's not in pirate colors. I mean, you know, she has cool minus effects and obviously a very powerful ultimate, but I was just a little surprised.
I ran one of her in my four-color energy sideboard also. she was in my board for the mirror matches. And also, because she could blow up an enchantment, any random Solemnity crap you ran into, you have the option to just blow up Solemnity and continue rolling. She was actually really impressive for me over the weekend, like a lot better than I thought she was going to be. Because she just, when you play her, a lot of times these mirror matches turn into board stalls. So you play her, and if they don't break that board stall real fast, between the menaces she pops out and the board state that you're stalled out with, you can force in 1 point of damage, typically.
Yeah.
So. I actually really like Vraska in the sideboards of these decks. She reminds me of the role that Elspeth played in like the old Abzan mid-range deck during Con Standard, where when you have these mid-range decks where like all the cards are basically the same and you're just slamming into each other, finding a way to trump it is going to be huge. And so like you both have Scarab God, so you're boarding in Vraska's Contempt, like you already have Hostage Takers, but there has to be a way to just go over the top. Or ways to steal games, and Vraska is exactly that.
Yeah. Do you see Vraska making her way into the main board at all in the near future, Chris?
I don't think so, because I don't think that she's good with the game one configurations for the Sultai Energy decks.
Okay.
But I definitely see her seeing, you know, just a steady one or two of in the sideboards. I also wanted to touch on Deathgorge Scavenger. I think that it's actually very good. You had mentioned that you thought you would see some other more dedicated graveyard hate, But a card like this that can come in against the God Pharaoh's Gift decks is awesome. But it can also just come in against the Approach the Second Sun decks when you're trying to get out the removal spells for your deck, and it just gives you something that can allow you to attack, which is always important.
Yeah, absolutely. And the card that really stuck out to me in this deck, at least in the main board, was, and we already touched on a little bit, was the Blossoming Defenses. Mm-hmm. Watching the open over the weekend, I saw a lot of Gideon of the Trials trying to attack these energy decks and the decks that were main decking Blossoming Defense, and the controllers just to be able to Blossoming Defense their own creature and then just eat the Gideon on the backswing. And I know that Gideon Alexander card was the defining card of Standard last go around, and Gideon of the Trials makes a pretty decent impression, but I think just this technology alone kind of invalidates Gideon, I think, moving forward for at least a couple of winks. What do you guys think about that?
The Gideon is pretty huge for the Approach deck. He's one of the reasons I like the deck so much, because you want to play around board wipes by not committing too much to the board. You want to play around Settle the Wreckage by having threats in place so you can attack with some and not with all. But when Gideon's sitting in play, you need to kill the Gideon and to kill the opponent. So you end up playing into Settle a little more aggressively. So Gideon is, I think, one of the big linchpins for that deck, I think, being a deck moving forward. So the ability for Blossoming Defense to kind of shield him somewhat is pretty large. The two things with Approach you have to be able to do is you have to play around, Settle, and you have to find a way to be able to kill Gideon without overcommitting yourself to the board, and then just hope they don't play a turn two Search for Extraza. Otherwise, that can like run the game over real efficiently. So I think Blossoming Defense fixes one of those problems somewhat, because not being able to bubble whenever they plan to can actually really throw off the game plan.
Yeah, most definitely. So let's shift into, you know, an old standby in second place. We've got Remnant Red in the hands of Tad McTaggart. Not a lot has changed from this deck from when we had Innistrad and Zendikar in the deck. What do you like about this deck here, Chris?
It's just like the de facto aggressive deck in the format. And if your deck does not have game against Remnant Red, then you know you should have a lot of cards in your sideboard for it, or likely find a different deck. And in fact, it lost from the rotation was Falcon Wrath Gorger, so you can just play more Soulscar Mages to make up for that. And then it gained Lightning Strike.
Yeah.
So I think that this deck is better now than it was then, although Hostage Taker being an answer to Hazoret and you know giving them some game against your early one drops as a way to attrition you out kind of sucks. But I still think this deck is very, very good, and if I wanted to just like put together a deck to play either on Magic Online or an FNM with cards that I already had from last Standard season, this is the deck that I would gravitate towards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so as a week one metagame call for a new Ixalan Standard, was this a good idea going to this weekend, or was it just kind of like, well, I have this deck, I'll just put in the new Lightning Strikes and call it a day? So what do you think about positioning wise here?
I think it's always just going to be a good deck. Like, I don't think that there are any decks that it just has like a terrible matchup against game one. I feel like what we saw this weekend is just like all of the, you know, the heavy hitters of the open series just didn't play it. So that's right. Why it didn't put up the results. So like if you have this format where it's very skill intensive and the decks are all like 50-50, 60-40, you know, 65-35, you know, that 10-15-20% can be made up with the skill edge. So Remnant Red may be 50-50 in the dark, you know, against the Sultai Energy deck, but you know, random person playing against Andrew Jessup with Sultai Energy, I'm going to give that to Andrew Jessup, and that's what happened in the tournament.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. What about Justin? Are you or Sean have any you know, insight onto Mono Red, or is it just like Chris said, it's just Mono Red?
I mean, yeah, it's just Mono Red. I was a little surprised that Rigging Runner didn't make it into it, just because of the raid mechanic on it.
Oh, the one drop, yeah.
I was expecting it to make it somewhere on this list, but yeah, no, it's mono red. It's red deck wins, and it's the best red deck wins deck we've had in Standard in a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, it has more reach than most red decks that have ever been printed. Like Hazoret and Chandra give it like a lot of reach, as well as the one mana base. As far as Rigging Runner, like he's a little underwhelming in the current format because there are still like World of Virtuosos and 2/3s coming down that make, even though he has First Strike, doesn't have as much relevance. The thing is, I don't think the deck is as good right now as it was before the rotation, because so many decks came in knowing how to beat it. Like Teemer knew that the plan was to bring in Cartouche and make a big Hydro and attack with lifelink. Mm-hmm. But it's still a really good deck because for all the decks in the format, the hands you want to keep against red are very different than the hands you want to keep against everything else. So in the blind, when you sit down from your opponent, you look at your opening hand, you're like, okay, I've got a tempo play, I've got an early threat, we can go, I don't have a ton of interaction, but this is great, I can actually pressure my opponent, and if they're on red, that hand's awful. Like, if you can't answer what they're doing, you're in trouble. Whereas against red, you want to have, like, a bunch of your more mediocre creatures that gum up the board and a little bit of removal spells. So it kind of, like, rewards the players who play it for the fact that right now it is actually kind of down. As far as the numbers, and so now people are going to keep looser hands because they're not as afraid of everybody being on it, and so you're going to get some just turn four, turn five kills because they keep a hand that doesn't stop you from doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving right down the top eight here, we've got in third place Dan Jessup, who is Andrew Jessup's older, younger brother, I think, and playing the exact same 75, just say what we said about the previous deck into this comment section here, and we'll move on from there. Into David Thomas's fourth place deck, playing Blue-White Approach. This one's actually playing main deck Gideon the Trials, which Jim Davis was not playing, which I find kind of interesting. But for the rest of it, you know, it's pretty much just the same, you know, Aether Meltdowns, Cast Out Censors, Disallows, Glimmers, Subtle Wreckages, Supreme Bowls, and Approach the Second Suns. Week one control deck, it can't get much more stock than this. Chris, what are your thoughts on the Approach deck here?
I actually really like it. I think that gaining Search for Azkanta and Settle the Wreckage has been huge for this deck. And it's just going to be something that everybody has to keep in mind moving forward. The success of this deck, I think, is going to come down to the number of duresses and negates that are in opposing sideboards as the format starts to wax and wane.
Yeah, absolutely. And really briefly, kind of like a quick aside on Duress and Negate, there was a tweet that I think Jim Davis actually sent out during the weekend of the Open talking about how Duress and Negate will probably be mainboard cards in the next couple of weeks. Do you see that as the trend we're moving towards because of decks like this?
I mean, maybe. if we start seeing, you know, these Approach decks, then yeah, like, there's not a lot of main deck, like, versatile cards that can interact with its game plan.
Yeah.
And so if we get to the point where those cards are seen play in the main deck, then Approach will start to wane, and then we'll just see something like Ramunap Red kind of, you know, pull up the rear. So we might end up with a cyclical type of format here where we have energy decks doing very good, Approach starting to take over, you know, those interactive cards coming in to the main deck, Mono Red taking over, and then it'll just flip back to the energy decks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And just Justin, about you and Sean, anything that stands out to you about Blue White Approach here?
I thought it was a meme deck until it put up results.
the search for Azkanta just makes it so much more consistent. I've been testing it online, and I like running three of it because theoretically, by the middle of the game, you only have one dead one because you can have one as the land and one as the enchantment.
Yeah.
I don't quite go full for playing it settled. The way that my team had talked to me about playing against Settle the Wreckage was that we would, against our blue-white approach matchups, play a semi-decent creature main phase one if they have mana open. And if they don't counter that creature, like if it's a Whirler or like a Cub and we have a bunch of energy sitting around, if they're not countering that creature, that's telling us we're probably facing a settle, and so we'd attack with less creatures. We use their main phase one interactions because I viewed it as a board wipe, so my interaction was like, oh, I'm going to play my creatures main phase two, so they don't know what's following up. But actually playing it main phase one was getting them to give us information on whether or not they're planning on settling. Because if I cast a Whirler and they counter it and they had four mana open and I had two or three attackers, then they don't have a settle because they would take advantage of the three for one given the opportunity.
Yeah.
So then I feel comfortable swinging out that turn and possibly the next turn. If they don't do something to drastically indicate their play has changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So to kind of compare and contrast the two decks, we have in fifth place, we have Jim Davis playing an almost identical 75 here. David's playing Gideon's of the Trials in the main board. He's got Pull from Tomorrow, while Jim is more on the just all-out control plan without like the mass card draw and Pull from Tomorrow. Chris, I'll go to you for this one. Is there a version of this you like better, being more practical with Gideon's, or do you like Jim's approach going, and I pardon the pun of approaching, having a more long drawn-out game plan?
I think that I like the Gideon's just because it feels like you just have like a sneaky trump for the mayor.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be very difficult for them to like not only combo with Approach but also beat a Gideon emblem.
And I would also guess that there's a level of sort of like next leveling your opponent if they don't know that you're playing the version with the, if you're in the mirror, for instance, and they don't know you're on the Gideon plan, they might be cycling their cast outs a little bit more recklessly. And then all of a sudden it's like turn eight, they've already exhausted most of them. You put Gideon down with counter backup and all of a sudden it is now the only thing that matters in that game without a way for them to take care of it.
When if you look at David's list, David is running two main deck disallows, and what has he got? He's got four Supreme Wills.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Davis's list was only one disallow and two Supreme Wills. Like he instead had like some Essence Scatters and some Farm to Markets. Mm-hmm. Decks in testing had like no hard counters. It was Censors and Supreme Wills because you wanted your counters to be able to find you your approach when you're ready to go off. And I like having at least two or three hard counters within your list so you can trump the mirror match since it's going to be a little more prevalent moving forward.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we see, of course, in both sideboards, we see a mass of creatures. We've got Torrential Gearhulks, we've got Caracal. David's not playing the four of Authority of the Councils, which I think, if you're not expecting a lot of mono red, is probably the correct play. But as I'm sure we have all noticed, when you go play in Texas, the red mages come out in force, and it doesn't matter if it's standard or modern. So I almost like having the four approaches, the four authorities there, but I can definitely see the rationale for not having those if mono red is on the downtick for a particular weekend. So let's go right along into sixth place here. We've got four color energy, sort of the classic boogeyman of the format ever since adopting Scarab God here. Not a lot has changed within these decks. You know, we start seeing Confiscation Coup in the main board. Is there anything really here that you like about this deck, Chris?
I think it's fine. Ultimately, I can see people just shying away from it towards the Sultai energy decks, just as having access, like more consistent access to Hostage Taker, I think is going to end up being better than getting something like Glorybringer or the red cards. But really, like, you're just looking at, you know, a hand standard deviation away from winning any given match with either of these decks. So whatever you're more comfortable with. You know, if you have foil Korean Glorybringers and you just can't let them go, you know, play your four-color energy deck. Nobody's going to bat an eye.
If you happen to have foil Korean Glorybringers, we'll sign them for you at some event in the near future. So, Sean, Justin, what about you guys? Anything that just sticks out to you about four-color energy, or is it just the de facto gold standard right now for the time being?
I mean, if I was going to play an energy deck, I would play the Sultai energy deck, personally. I think four colors is real greedy. I know that energy has a lot of ways to, you know, get around, you know, the fact that they're running four colors, but...
Right.
I like being greedy. I just... don't have it in my heart to be that greedy.
Oh, where's the tenacity, man? Where's the guts?
The mana bases, the mana bases aren't really that bad for the four color energy. I think it really depends on what meta game you're expecting. Because if you're expecting mid range and approach, then the Sultai deck has a better plan against those decks. You have better long reach, you have more attrition, you have better interaction for the control decks. But if you're expecting there's simply a fair amount of like any kind of weird Mardu variants or Ramned Up Red, then the four-color energy version, getting World of Virtuoso, is really big for Ramned Up Red or anybody else who's trying to just attack you.
Sure.
The ability just to kind of pop out some chump blockers until your better late game takes over. But I do think the four-color energy deck should be running Hostage Takers. Like they're better than the Glorybringers in most situations. And the Chandras I haven't been very impressed with in the format in general currently against all the mid-range decks. Mm-hmm. The Chandra's not as impressive because her minus four doesn't kill a whole lot of the things you want to kill. And so for me, I would personally shade away from the Chandras. It gives you a little bit less red reliance and go with a couple Hostage Takers. I just don't think you get to run the full four. So you're not as good at this Sultai match, but you have a better Roundup Red matchup, which kind of depends on what you're expecting to face.
Yeah, most definitely. And moving right along into seventh place, we've got almost a, not quite 75 for 75, but four-color energy again with not a lot of changes. This one's playing Sky Sovereign Consul Flagship in the main board, a couple of tweaks here and there in the mana base and creature numbers and things like that. But other than that, pretty much the exact same deck here played by John Toon. And in eighth place, we've got I wouldn't call this a new deck, but it's a spin on a newer deck or a new spin on an old deck. This is Brennan DeCandio playing Esper Gift. This is a deck that was kind of taken off earlier in the format where we had just Blue-White Gift and we had Jeskai, which saw a lot of play at GP Denver, which I know a couple of us were at. Chris, what's your take on the Gift deck? Is this a gift that you want to unwrap?
I mean, I really like it. I think that a lot of the, like, when Brennan puts his mind to a list and is able to refine it, he usually does very well that weekend that he plays the deck. But like we saw with the previous iteration where some of the other big teams picked it up, changed it around, and made it, you know, an actual force in the metagame, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen with this. I know Brennan's been streaming a bit with different versions of the deck. Mm-hmm. I know he's cut Vana because he didn't think that it was very good, so on and so forth. And he's been doing very well, and the deck looks like it has legs. So
yeah, most definitely. So obviously this is the version that drops the red things like Cathartic Reunion and so like Neonate picking up Fatal Push, Vaughn, like you said, Secret Squire and also Hostage Taker. Are these cards just in your guys' minds better than the red alternatives?
Hostage Taker is huge. Yeah. I mean, if you bring a hostage taker back from the graveyard, like I get a 4/4 hostage taker, that's better than your 2/3 hostage taker. This is great. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I like the Seeker Squire quite as much. I know that Steven's been working on some lists, and I like the ones that have the freebooter, the duress, you know, mesmeric fiend kind of creature.
Yeah.
And then I've also seen like them trying to shave away a few of like the ballistas, like not going quite as heavy on ballistas and a couple other cards. To actually run one or two main deck Scarab Gods, so that way you have your own Scarab God package. Mm-hmm. But I like the deck as a whole. Hostage Taker really gives the deck reach and gives it legs. Charter Course is pretty good at either giving you advantage against control matchups because you can attack with a Minister or just looting. And Fatal Push, like, you still get your interaction. So I think the deck's great. And Vana is really sweet against any of the mid-range matchups, being able to pay 7 life and just kill whatever's a problem.
Yeah. One quick note, and this is something that Zach Elsick actually posted on Twitter this afternoon. When you reanimate a Vana with the Godfarer's Gift, it's haste on your turn, not your opponent's turn. And so if you think
Godfarer's Gift gives haste till the end of turn. It's like a really small. I remember at GP Denver, I was talking to Elsick, and he was talking to Patrick Sullivan, and like he mentioned that, and everybody sitting around us was like, "Wait, what? It's still the end of turn? Why did they even put that extra sentence on? It was just weird." Because like you don't get there's a lot of more small interactions, like you reanimate a Minister of Inquiries and you pass because you want to block and then activate him and you can't activate him because you passed. A lot of weird small things that you lose because of the end of turn clause that's just kind of snuck on the bottom of that paragraph of text.
Yeah, so don't think you're gonna go vindicating whatever you want all willy nilly with Vana here, but yeah. Yeah, little edges like that brought to you by one and only Zach Elsick.
His favorite edge he's given, and I mentioned this earlier, is the Siren Storm Tamer. Countering Settle the Wreckage because it targets you. Like that is,
yes.
I think that's really big.
So that kind of runs at the top eight here for the Dallas Open. We can look further deeper into the top 64. We see a lot of the same stuff over and over and over. We see little sprinklings of Grixis Control, Green Black Energy, and things like that. But for the most part, I would say these are the de facto decks that you want to be worried about going into the next week. And let's kind of shift our attention into, I'm going to find it again, into the Classic, which had a little bit different flavor. and talking about Zach Elsick, he comes in first place with a deck that as soon as somebody said Tezzeret won a Classic, I went, wait, what, where? Modern? No, sadly not. But we've got Grixis Improvise being played by Zach Elsick, Tezzeret the Schemer, Contraband Kingpin, Herald of Anguish, Maverick Thopterus, PNLR, Scarab God, and a whole bunch of junky artifacts.
Real bad artifact.
Somehow Zach assembled a pile of cards that he probably picked up from a draft and won a Classic with it. Chris, what is your take on this ridiculous deck?
I mean, I think this is just going to be one of those decks that Zach Elsick will do well with, and then other people that will play it will just like frustrate themselves and their opponents. it definitely has a plan, and this deck does things, so that's not something that is up for contention. Whether or not it's going to end up being good, I mean, who knows? Like, it was week one, You know, it could just be that he, you know, just ran over everybody. You know, there weren't a lot of, like, you know, usual suspect top eight people from the Open that did poorly, so played in the Classic, so it could have just been the field was weaker.
Sure.
Who knows? Who knows? But Zach is a very good Magic player and a very innovative deck builder, and because of that, we're going to see a lot of this deck from people moving forward because it's new and cool.
Yeah.
And I'm skeptical whether or not it's very good, but Herald of Anguish is big, and you can play it for cheap, so who knows?
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, you know, decks people pick up after it first breaks out, you know, I remember the first couple of weeks after he won GP Oklahoma City with Lantern Control and sitting across people at my, you know, Thursday night Modern events, and people are just like, all right, I'm going to play this turn one Ghoulcaller's Bell and pass the turn. I'm like, do you have any idea what you're doing? And usually the response is, well, not really, but I'm going to figure it out over the next couple of turns or 100 turns.
Yeah.
He'd gotten a list from Peter McKinney, like a South Texas player who had done pretty well day one. He got 31st. It was slightly different, so like he made some of his own tweaks to it. I tried to play it the other night online, and like I won with it. I wasn't ever sure how I won with it, because I'd play a Herald of Anguish like on turn four, and then they would like harness lightning him, and I go, I don't know what else I'm supposed to do anymore. And somehow I'd still get there, because Contraband Kingpin was actually pretty interesting, because you would get like so many scries.
Yeah.
But Tezzeret like would come into play and die almost every single time.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was an interesting deck, and I would win, but I couldn't ever really put a finger on how I won. I just remember like the lobby ending and saying that I won, and I was like, I don't understand what happened. But I mean, it's a cool deck.
Yeah, you got
that's the hallmark of a Zach Elsick deck. I won, but I don't really know how.
Yeah. I love to try his stuff. Like I picked up Lantern from him before he won GP Oklahoma City. And then I remember playing it the weekend before of Oklahoma City, or the weekend before at a PPTQ, and I had a lot of people getting mad, being like, man, what is this deck? This deck's stupid. It's real Jake. And the next weekend, he won the GP, and I go, oh, thank you. I'm like, that's great. If you could have won a week before, so nobody would have made fun of me, that would have been phenomenal. But okay.
But at least they can't say you jumped on the bandwagon. It was, you know, you were you're at the very the front of the train.
25 cents a piece in North Dallas. It was great.
Oh man! So if there's ever a guy to make, you know, just to make us go, wait, what's going on here? Zach is the guy to do it. So aside from that, we had a lot of four color energy, Ramunap Red, Esper Gift again, Sultai Energy, four color energy was also in here. The one other deck that stuck out to me, and you know whether or not this is anything of all that interesting, is Grixis Control in the hands of Michael Villavicencio. Gear Hulks, Blue Gear Hulks, Scarab Gods, Abrades, Glimmers, Harness Lightnings, Search for Azkanta, Sweltering Suns. Pretty stock Grixis Control deck. Thoughts on this one, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's just a pretty stock Grixis Control deck. I do like that it has Search for Azkanta in it, as most of the control decks will likely end up with that moving forward. And the Scarab God can end games very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is better than the Approach deck, but with two negates and in the sideboard, two in the main, but no duresses.
Yeah.
I wonder if he actually played against any of the Approach decks in the tournament, because I feel like this deck should be like not very favorite against.
Yeah, should be a dog, I would say. I completely agree with that. You know, Justin and Sean, what do you think about this? Anything?
I mean, the strengths of these blue-black based control decks are that, and playing this last weekend at the SCG with it, is when you're playing a Scarab God deck and you are contributing less creatures to the graveyard than your opponent is, you're actually like marginally in a better position, because you're kind of controlling on when their things are dying, and so like you kind of are blinking last in the Scarab God race. It just feels better to be the deck with less creatures whenever you're playing Scarab God, because you're only taking your opponent's resources. But yeah, it's definitely not favoring the Approach matchup, and I think it's trying to beat the other Scarab God decks at their own game, which I'm not sure is exactly what you want to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, there are four Vraska's Contempt in the deck, so that's a lot.
You have a lot of Contempt.
It probably handles Mono Red pretty well.
Yeah, and Gearhulk's really hard for a lot of those decks to answer. Like, the Sultai one, I don't think it has an effective way to answer a Gearhulk, because their removal was, they Blossoming Defense their thing, or they Fatal Push your thing.
Yeah.
So, like, you resolve a Gearhulk, you beat Scarab God in combat, so they have to kill your Gearhulk. Blood blocks, which means you just don't swing into those things.
Yeah.
So it's because they don't have the red for their braids, like the teamer version. So against this Sultai one, this Torrential Gearhulk can do some work if you can control their board state.
Yeah. Yeah, really good point there. Yeah. So that was a bit for... Oh, I do have to give a shout-out to our good buddy James Black, who took some of the plays with his Romanop Red deck. James has been on the show plenty of times before, and he's a good friend of all of ours. Good job, James. Thumbs up. So that's week one in a nutshell. And so I kind of want to turn the spotlight to you now, Chris. In a brand new format like this, you know, people coming into week one kind of had an idea of what they wanted to do. Obviously, Sulta Energy was sort of a breakout deck here. Taking what we've seen from this week and, you know, all the things we've seen online with Magic Online, things of that nature, what is, you know, a player like yourself's approach to moving into week two and forward into this new standard season?
So I think that I'm likely going to be working on the Sultai deck and the Approach deck. I feel like it might be good to turn the Sultai into a four-color deck. Mm-hmm. And because, like, World Virtuoso is still very, very good, and if we're getting rid of Glorybringer and Chandra, like we had talked about earlier, to make room for Hostage Taker, then you could very easily just morph into the Sultai deck but splash for... World of Virtuoso, which really helps against those aggressive decks and is a card that, you know, you can still gain some value with against opposing Hostage Takers, right? Like, even if they take your Virtuoso, you're still able to use your energy to make 1-1 flyers that can attack. And if they don't have a bunch of energy themselves, then they just have a worthless 2-3. Mm-hmm. So I think that that might have some potential. But really, it's just going to be tuning Sultai Energy to beat the other Sultai Energy decks.
Yeah, most definitely. And so let's say we turn the clock back 2-3 weeks now. You know, you've seen the full Ixalan spoiler. You're kind of getting geared up for your very first, you know, paper tournament or Magic Online tournament. Are you more a player who's too likely to pick up an existing deck and tweak, or are you more inclined to pick up a bunch of cards and go, okay, I have this interesting idea, I'm going to try and make something brand new? Kind of which camp do you fall into?
So traditionally, I am more of a tuner than a brewer. So I've never been sparked with the idea to make something brand new that's like very, very good. But when I'm on a team, I'm generally the person that's able to take the best deck and then find the best version of the best deck. Mm-hmm. So when at the beginning of a new format like this, I usually start with, oh man, these new cards are awesome. I really want to play Ripjaw Raptor. I really want to play Regisaur Alpha. You know, we have these Mana Dorks. Let's go ahead and make this Dinosaurs deck. And then I'll play them against my teammates or friends, and they're just like Hostage Taking all my stuff. And the Dinosaur decks literally can't ever beat that card in their entire life. And so quickly you're like, all right, well, I'm off it. Now let's just play whatever the best version is that everybody else is beating me with.
Right. Well, let's talk about dinosaurs here for a minute then, Chris, because this was originally your big, you know, I want to talk about dinosaurs in a podcast. So, and that's why you're here tonight, you know, other than just to give us your insight. You know, dinosaurs, it's the biggest thing coming out of Ixalan next to pirates. You know, Hostage Taker has kind of stolen all of their thunder, quite literally. And, you know, so looking at dinosaurs, we have things like Carnage Tyre, like you mentioned, Death Gorger, that raptor, that thing, the little green one. Yeah, the Ripjaw Raptor. You know, Registrar Alpha, you know, we have all these really sweet cards. What is it missing? Or is it just somebody hasn't quite cracked the code yet?
I think it's a trap. Unfortunately. So, like...
Heard it here first, guys.
In a world that doesn't have Hostage Taker, I think the Ripjaw Raptor is just, like, the stone cold. But there are these efficient ways now for them to answer it. Because before, it's like there's no fetch lands. So the, you know, the availability on revolting a Fatal Push is much lower. Mm-hmm. There isn't like an efficient burn spell that gets rid of it. You know, Vraska's Contempt can trade, you know, at an even rate. But if you're playing it on turn three, they might not be able to do it yet. So you're like, you know, this card's insane. There's nothing that lines up very, very good against it. But Hostage Taker lines up very good against it. And so, like, this under-costed, overpowered threat that you're supposed to use to take the tempo of the game just gets, like, you lose the tempo when they play the Hostage Taker. And if you ever get to a point in the late game where you're, like, top decking, there's like, oh, well, this Hostage Taker is also a 4-5. then you just can't win. So, I think it's a trap. I don't know what we would need to make it not be a trap.
Okay.
My guess is that we would need better 2 and 3 mana dinosaurs from the next set to make the deck end up being something, but then it just becomes like a mid-range monsters deck, which, I mean, I'm never upset playing a deck like that. But everything surrounding the Hostage Taker is also trouble too, right? Because you have Whining Constrictor alongside Energy, Walking Ballista, and Rishkar, which are all very good in this mid-range battle that the dinosaur decks are going to be. Mm-hmm. And while you do have something like Regisaur Alpha that can still leave some value behind if they Hostage Taker it, then you have to kill the Hostage Taker, otherwise they just get to play the Regisaur Alpha, and then you're real far behind.
Right.
So unfortunately, this one card being as good as it is and as popular as it is, I think it just makes it so that the dinosaurs aren't playable.
Sure.
I could see Carnage Tyrant being like a good finisher, but even then, it's not that great against the control decks because they have Settle the Wreckage as an answer.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the only dinosaur that I think we might actually end up seeing play is if a green-white ramp deck becomes a thing, and there's the Waking Suns avatar that kills all non-dinosaurs when it comes into play.
Yeah.
I think that that's the one that has the most potential.
Sure, sure.
So, I think the dinosaur deck just, like, what it really needs is rotation. Like, it needs this like, because every dinosaur you look at, if you look at them, it plays a similar game plan to the energy deck, but every single one is worse than the mirror and the energy matchup, and most, like, Hydra's in most cases better against the format than Ripjaw Raptor is, and all these things because he's, like, so resilient and he gets so out of control. And so what you need is Hostage Taker, like you said, it breaks the deck, so we need mana to be worse, so we can't put Hostage Taker anywhere we want to freaking put Hostage Taker. Like, if we can't attune an Aether Hub into Hostage Takers, it becomes a lot harder to put them everywhere.
Yep.
But the deck has so many pieces, and it can run any card it needs to answer any matchup that Dinosaurs is trying to play too fair in a very after a very unfair Kaladesh block.
Yeah. So hashtag ban Hostage Taker?
No.
Just errata to, like, you get all energy is reduced by half. So if you get 3 energy, you get 1.5 energy, and if you don't already have a half of energy, you can't round up. So, like, just make it really complicated so a lot of people just drop it because they can't use calculators in the game, and so we just move on from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't think the Hostage Taker will end up being even as ubiquitous as something like Hangerback Walker was during its time, or it was literally in every single deck.
Yeah.
But it definitely makes it so that I'm not going to be casting Ripjaw Raptor anytime soon. So.
All right.
It's unfortunate, but true.
Yeah, so it's a trap. You know, even things like Lightning Strike and Abrade easily killing our favorite pirate here, just not good enough, which is kind of sad, actually.
Because then you also have everything else that the deck is doing to,
yeah.
to answer. And your good cards don't even line up that well against their cards.
Yeah. So you guys heard it here first. Even though it's the most hyped creature type since dragons, you know, don't play the dinosaur deck unless you're going to FM or something, or you're going to play it in Commander or anything like that. Just leave them in the Stone Age. Leave them extinct.
I played against dinosaurs twice at the SCG, and every time my dinosaur opponent, I would sit down in game one, they would go forest, commune with dinosaurs, and I would just lean back. I'm like, well, this is great. I'm like, moving on to the next round. Like, dude, it was never a problem. Because what's great is whenever you do kill Ripjaw Raptor and then you Scarab got it, or you kill like a Registrar Alpha and then you Scarab got it.
Oh, God.
Like, it's so absurd.
Yep.
So life did not find a way.
No.
I had to get one in there. I had to get one in. All right. So that wraps up the standard talk. Week 2 is coming up really fast. The World Championships is this weekend as well. There's no talent going to come out of that when you put together, I think, 16 or 32 of the best Magic players in the world, and they all just kind of come together in this massive greatness. I expect some cool stuff to come out of that, but we'll have to see until the end of the weekend before anything comes of that. Again, I'm going to turn the spotlight over to our new best friend, Mr. Van Meter here. You've got some stuff that you're working on right now, and so I want to give you a couple minutes here to talk about your new show and also the Play for Fae tournament that's going on this weekend.
Yeah, so I have a new live web show that I'm running on my Twitch channel called Friends Day Night Magic. It's Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It goes for about 2 hours.
Oh.
The first season is 10 episodes long. We just wrapped up episode 3 earlier this week with Cedric Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 4 will be next week with BBD. He's going to join me. And what we do is we play a deck through a league of my guest choice. And it's just like a bunch of chatting, banter, back and forth. We take questions from chat and from Twitter. We play a mini game that I come up with each time during the game, during the show. So the first episode was with Todd Stevens. We played Magic Card, Metal Band, or both. So I gave him some words, and he had to figure out if it was the name of a Magic Card, a Metal Band, or both. When I had Caleb Durward on, we played a game where I gave him a song title, and he had to determine if it was a Fall Out Boy song title, or Panic at the Disco song title, or just gibberish. He didn't get any of those right.
I wouldn't either.
Any of those right.
This last week with Cedric, I actually reached out to Craig Kremples and Patrick Sullivan, his casting partners, and had them give me what their favorites were of 10 different categories. And we played the Newlyweds game with Cedric, and he did not get very many of those right either. So, yeah, we've got some fun games lined up. I commissioned Inkling Customs to make a like special exclusive token for each of my guests for the show.
Very cool.
Throughout the show, depending on how well we do at the deck, you know, any donations or subscribers and how well the guest does, we give those out to people at the end of the show based off of, you know, how many we racked up during the show. And yeah, it's been really fun so far. It's gotten a lot of good feedback from people that have been on the show and from people that have watched it. So pretty excited to see how well we can do for this first season and then maybe step it up a notch for season two and see if we can have a little more production quality rather than just me here in my kitchen.
Hey, look at the backgrounds for us. I mean, this is not a Scorsese set at all, but
so this weekend is the Play for Faye charity event. So Cedric reached out to me earlier this year. He wanted to put on a charity event for the Breast Cancer Research Foundation in honor of his mom, who is currently in her second bout of breast cancer.
Chris, did we lose you?
House where I work. They got on the...
I think we're losing you there for a couple of seconds there, Chris. Oh, maybe. Maybe not. Let's see if we can get Chris back here really quickly. Apologize for the technical difficulties, everybody.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now, yes.
There we go.
The second bout of breast cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so his mom's name is Faye, so that's why it's Play for Faye.
Okay.
But he reached out to me. I connected him with Mox Boarding House, where I work at Card Kingdom here in Seattle. Got all that sorted. But once I found out the date for his event, I was like, hey, I'm planning this show. Let's have you on the Wednesday before your event. I'm doing tokens. Let's do a token for the event. So there's the special Very Play cool. for Faye token that Inkling Customs did for us. You can get them at the event. We also gave away like 10 or 15 of them on Wednesday on the show. And it's there'll be a bunch of artists there. A bunch of things have been donated for a silent auction. Mm-hmm. Myself, Cedric, Gavin Verhey, Melissa DeTora, Adam Prozac, and Aaron Forsyth are going to be spellslinging.
Yes.
So I know I will have Modern, Standard, and Commander with me. If anybody wants to come battle, they'll be able to cash in their tickets to battle and get some Ixalan booster packs. There's also on-demand Ixalan drafts, all kinds of stuff on Saturday. This weekend, the 7th, I believe it is. It's just going to be a good time for a good cause, and hopefully we can raise some money.
Yeah, most definitely. You can go check out the hashtag PlayForFay. I'm actually on the Twitter page for it right now. We've got pictures of Cedric holding up life-size Amonkhet and Our Devastation lands, like the full art ones. They are as big as he is. We've got some signed expeditions. We've got foreign copies of some conspiracy cards, Japanese Jace versus Chandra, some cool play mats. Like, if I lived anywhere close to Seattle, I would be there this weekend. This looks like a ton of fun, and I hope that it is successful, and I hope they do more of these in the future. This is a stroke of genius from Cedric, I think. So, did we lose Chris again? Oh no!
I don't think so. Oh, there he is.
We're back.
I'm back. Yeah, I've just been like going in and out.
No worries.
So.
But yeah, it's like I said, this is super cool. I hope that it does well and it continue to do stuff like this. You know, it's always great to see the community coming together for a greater cause other than just, you know, bashing with hostage takers.
Yeah, it's pretty cool lineup of people that are going to be there. Down here we do some charity events for like suicide awareness and things like that, and it's really good to see the Magic community take their hobby and turn it into like an advancement for something that's a struggle. So definitely hope it works out and if it becomes a yearly thing, that would be sweet to make it out there for one of them one time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Cedric is hoping to turn it into something that's annual.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, always good, like you said, Sean, to see, you know, Magic players doing something more than just making, just being a hobby, taking it to kind of that next level, and, you know, reaching out to do really positive things. So this is really cool. And like I said, check out the hashtag PlayForFae over on Twitter, and you can kind of get the full details there. Mox Boarding House is kind of putting this whole thing on, I'm guessing. And yeah, like, tons of cool people are going to be spelsing in there, tons of cool prizes. If you're in the area, I can't imagine there's a reason why you would not be there this weekend. So yeah. I think that wraps it up. That is another week in the world of Magic here. I want to say another huge thank you to Chris for joining us this week. Super thankful for that. I hope I can have you on again sometime soon. Say that everybody, you know, needs to go and check out Friendsday Night Magic over on what is the name of your Twitter page here, Chris?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. It's at Chris_VanMeter. The show is at FNM with CVM. And you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chris_VanMeter.
There you go. Yeah. And you can find, of course, every week the EOT Newsflash over on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Just look for the EOT Newsflash. You'll find us there. Sean, I know you've been doing some streaming this week as well. Find you at Busted Sleeves on Twitter and else. And then I know, Justin, you're kind of in the process of kind of building up your social media at Justin Forkner.
Yep, at Justin Forkner.
Cool. It's all very, very simple around here. Well, since our usual time mage is not here, Chris, I'm going to give the final word to you. Usually it's a let's do it again, but I'm going to give the final word to you tonight. You know, what do you got for us?
Let's do it again.
Yes! The Why legend lives on, right? Awesome. 85 and going strong. Well, thanks so much tonight for watching, guys. Big thanks to you, Chris, for coming on. You're welcome here anytime. But yeah, thanks for watching the episode of the EOT News Flash. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for watching.